Crowhill here from Beer and Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Today we ask No Man, our special guest, what is racism? So today we have a special guest on the Beer and Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. His name is No Man, and No Man comes to us because he recommended Jack London's The Sea Wolf, which I just finished reading, and I had a question for him about this book, but first I want to tell you just a couple things about No Man. One, he's an excellent sword fighter, and two, he's an excellent singer and has a storied career recording music.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah, and if I get permission from No Man, I might stick a little clip of some of your music in the show, if that's okay.
That's okay.
All right. So here is the quote that I had sent from page 75 of Seawolf. This loneliness is bad enough in itself, but to make it worse, he, the fellow they're talking about, is oppressed by the primal melancholy of the race. Knowing him, I review the old Scandinavian myths with clearer understanding. The white-skinned, fair-haired savages who created that terrible pantheon were of the same fiber as he. The frivolity of the laughter-loving Latins is no part of him. When he laughs, it is from a humor that is nothing else than ferocious. But he laughs rarely. He is too often sad. And it is a sadness as deep-reaching as the roots of the race. It is the race heritage, the sadness which has made this race sober-minded, clean-lived, and fanatically moral, and which, in this latter connection, has culminated among the English in the Reformed Church and Mrs. Grundy. So, I put the question to No Man whether that is racist.
Yes.
Okay. So,
no.
Yes, but no. All right, so explain.
Yes, but no. The problem is that I am fanatically allied to the idea that words matter.
All right.
And to say that that was racist implies that Swedes are a racial group.
Correct.
They are not.
Correct.
Ethnic group.
Correct.
There's a term in sociology called ethnocentrism.
Right.
So to say that Swedes are melancholy, dour, given to cynical laughter, whatever, so on and so forth, blah, 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 is not a racial statement so much as an ethnic statement. It's an ethnocentric statement.
So are those statements more permissible? Are those permissible? Ethnic stereotypes as opposed to racial stereotypes?
Depends on who you ask.
Yeah, well, I'm asking you, so I'm just thinking, you know, Latinos and Hispanics.
No, I happen to like Sweden. I have been there 2 times now.
Great.
And I'm not particularly happy with it. Let me get the book, will you, for a second?
Yeah, sure. Go for
it's
it.
It's right over there.
So, you got it on Kindle. Good for you.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Crowhill here, and now we have a brief musical interlude from No Man. He's inclined to do this sort of thing.
Was it you who did the pushing? Left the stains upon the cushion? Feet print on the dashboard upside down? Was it you sly woodpecker? That got into my Rebecca. If it was, you'd better leave this town. Yes, 'twas me who did the pushing. Left the stains upon the cushion. Feet print on the dashboard upside down. But ever since I made your daughter, I've had trouble passing water. So I think we're even all around.
All right, maybe we'll put that in there.
It's not going to work that particular way. So we're going to just go and
okay.
Naked right through here. Au naturel. Right?
Oh, okay, sounds good. So, No Man, I guess...
No, I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think racism to Swedes is a good idea. Do you?
Well, I think... What about just broad characterizations of any nature, so, or which it seems to me have to be all or nothing, right? You can't see that broad characterizations in a positive way are permissible.
Sure you can. Like, for instance, I can say that in a broad positive way that Wen Crowhill is an incredible representation of her ethnicity. She is intelligent and she is charming. And I have found her ethnicity to be all intelligent and charming to a woman, to a man.
Right, so you're saying, broadly speaking, women of her ethnicity are smart and charming.
Charming and intelligent.
Well, why is it okay to say positive things about an ethnic group, but not okay to say things, because any number of things that I might think are positive, somebody else might think are negative, right? Like, for just
hot-blooded Latinos, yeah. Right? They're quick.
I've been. People would say to me when I'm in a group or something of that nature. Somebody would say, "These referring to us, these two gentlemen are such and such, so on and so forth." I turn to my friend and I say, "You hear what he called you?
Right.
A gentleman." I wouldn't take that from anyone. You see how, if I meant that seriously, can you see that if I meant that seriously, I sound ridiculous?
Right.
Whereas if I didn't mean it seriously, the ridiculous is part of the humor.
I think we've lost humor in terms of race. I don't think we're allowed to do that anymore.
No, I didn't say race. I said I was answering Crowhill's question about broad generalizations. I wasn't saying race.
Okay.
Now, you've narrowed it down to something. I'm talking broad generalization.
Okay. So is it fair? Are I think what
you
what
two gentlemen accept that kind of a characterization?
To call people gentlemen, or to say, well, see,
being gentlemen.
Well, gentlemen means different things to different people. That's part of the problem.
Would you accept it?
If someone called me a gentleman?
I just did.
Okay, so I'd accept someone calling me a gentleman. Because, now, I realize it's different. Because usually people mean it as a compliment. It doesn't necessarily mean a compliment, but usually people mean it as a compliment.
There you go.
So how about this? It sounds like what you're saying is that if people make complimentary comments about a group, that's okay. But if people make negative comments about a group, that's not okay. Is that what you're saying?
In general, and speaking broadly, yes.
I see. Okay, so for example, what if Pigweed brought up earlier the question of the hot-blooded Latino? Now, some people might consider that a compliment, and some people might consider that not a compliment.
Because so, it seems like they would often describe themselves that way. Says, well, you know how we are.
Yeah.
So if somebody says, you know how we are you then turn around allowed to say that? Or is that something you can only say about yourself? Like, it's okay if somebody says, well, actually, you know, hot-blooded, like you said, is a kind of a neutral term, really, right? Mm-hmm. Depending, you could be in an admirable way, and it could be like you can't control your emotions.
Right.
It depends on how you mean. It depends on the context. It depends on how you're saying it. For instance, suppose I were to say that, let's use hot-blooded. If you were saying it in a situation where a person can't control their emotions, I don't think anybody likes to be, generally, broadly speaking, out of control, accused of being a no control of their emotions. I don't even think people like that characterization about themselves.
Right.
You know, if you were to say to me, I'm hot-blooded, I'm incapable of thinking, I'm incapable of doing anything other than feeling.
Right.
What if, or it could just mean you're...
In that context, that would not be terribly complimentary. Now, if you were to say I was hot-blooded in bed, I would say, how do you know?
Right, so it sounds like what you're describing is simply being kind to people, you don't insult them, you say nice things about them. And if you have something nice to say about a person or a group, that's okay. But if you have something negative to say about a person or a group, that's not okay. Is that a fair summary?
Fair. Sometimes I say things that are not nice about a person or a group because I want to piss them off.
Sure. But,
and if that's what I want to do, and if I want to drive them away, that's a good way of doing it. But,
yeah.
If I say that I have known you, Crow Hill, off and on for about, since college, 35, 40 years, something like that.
Before that, I was in high school.
I know you to be a man of probity. I know you to be a man of honesty. Well, I forget where I was going with that. Let me have another beer.
Good idea.
There you go. Good idea. So one thing that people will say is that racism it can only come from a position of power. That only someone, like some people will say that a minority group can't be racist because they don't have the power to impose anything on the majority group, but the majority can be racist toward the minority. What do you think of that concept?
I think it's nonsense.
Yeah, because if the definition of racism is just a broad negative characterization of a people, it doesn't have anything to do with power.
Yeah.
Right? It has to do with your lumping everybody into one group because you've seen a certain type of behavior from a handful of people that you now extrapolate. Yeah, right. Extrapolate to everybody else, and there's no power levels here.
How does power relate to the ability to insult?
Right. So
yeah, I never have quite understood that argument.
But I think no man is trying to look at this.
I haven't either. I align myself with your point of view. We're like two horses in a team. We're right together.
Okay.
So I think no man's position is that it's fine to be complimentary of a group. It's not fine to be negative towards a group. And that's an interesting and he's trying to express this in a philosophically consistent way. But I think it's clear to me anyway, that a lot of people who use the claim of racism in the public square are really not trying to be philosophically consistent. They're just using it as a way to jab somebody, as a way to get at somebody.
Yes, because from no man's... go ahead.
Well, yeah, that is generally the case. Please, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Will you please continue?
Yeah, from what I can gather, from no man's position, it's... You're just talking about groups of people. We're not even talking about racism. Racism as it applies to race, right? You shouldn't mistreat or discriminate against other people, right? For whatever reason. Why is this race aspect such a big deal?
Hmm.
So, for example, if a cop mistreats a white guy and a black guy, the white guy walks away going, man, that cop is a real a-hole. And the black guy goes, man, that cop is a real racist. And even though you're receiving the exact same behavior, I think there's a little bit of cherry picking and confirmation bias in calling what is just basic mistreatment of other people, which is negative, as racism, if it happens to be two different racial groups that are involved, even though there's nothing to say that there's necessarily race at the core of it.
Right. So what do you think about that, No Man?
Well, I think that sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me.
Yeah.
Is applied to that sort of situation. But racism frequently goes beyond that. For instance, if I were to say that Crow Hill is of German extraction, am I correct?
Well, that's what I always thought until I did Ancestry.com and realized I'm actually more Scandinavian than German, but that's, okay.
That's fair enough. You're Germanic extraction.
Yes, yeah.
Whether it's Germanic.
Yes.
If I say that you're, because of his Germanic extraction, Crow Hill is a Nazi. And therefore, we should be careful of him.
Okay.
We should, if he does anything suspicious, we should immediately incarcerate him, arrest him and incarcerate him. And
because we know what that kind is like.
We know what that kind is like, and therefore, we carry our racism on into action.
Right.
One of the stop and frisk, or no, was it stop and frisk up in New York that was declared unconstitutional? Stop and frisk is an example of racism in action. The Tulsa massacre was an example of racism.
Oh, I've got to challenge you on stop and frisk. There's if you go because they didn't stop and frisk the same number of white men on Wall Street as they do black men in high crime areas of the Bronx, you cannot extrapolate from that it was directed at black people. It was directed at where you find the crime. Now, just because, my point is just because that something has a racial outcome doesn't mean it's racist in its intent. So, for example, I remember there was a county or business. They say you can't ask employers to have employees to have high school diplomas because it's racially biased against blacks who have higher dropout rates. Is that a racist policy if it affects blacks more, even if the intention of the law does not have any racial component to it? But the result is.
Okay. Let's go back to stop and frisk.
All right.
The Supreme Court, I believe the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional.
Okay.
Crow Hill here with a brief explanation on this question. The judge was the U.S. District Court judge who said that stop and frisk was not unconstitutional in itself, but that the way it was done in New York was unconstitutional. That's the reason for the confusion there.
I don't think so. I just think that there was an uproar.
Did the Supreme Court rule that way? Yes or no?
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Okay, shall we look it up?
Yeah.
If you want, I just think there's a lot of pushback from the community.
Agree that there was pushback from the community, but what was decided in front of a court of law, whether it was the Supreme Court or the Superior Court of the district or whatever, what was decided in a court of law was that it was unconstitutional, and I'm sticking with it.
Okay, let's say, you know what? I'll give you that. Let's say it is that, but is it racist?
Is it racist? Yes.
Because it disproportionately affected people?
Because.
You could say arresting people for murder is racist.
Because the actions were disproportionately against a particular racial group.
Yes, what if you arresting people for murder would be disproportionately affecting black people? Because they disproportionately commit homicide.
I do not have sufficient information to make an intelligent comment on that.
Okay.
All right, so less than 10% of the country are black males, and 50% of the homicides are from black males. So there are a high percentage of black males in prison because of that law that says murder is wrong. So by your logic, you would have to say that the law that says you go to prison for murder disproportionately affects black people. It's inherently racist and should be struck down by the Supreme Court.
All right,
you were breaking up there for a bit. I don't think I got the entirety of what you were saying.
Okay, so the point was that just because a law has a disproportionate effect on a particular race does not mean that the law in its intent was racist. If, for example, if it's true, as a lot of statistics seem to show, that black men commit more homicides than white men, and that's what the statistics seem to show, then a law against homicide would seem racist because in its effect, it affects black men more than white men. But does that mean that a law against homicide is a racist law?
I understand. Now I understand what you're saying. Now I can respond semi-intelligently.
All right. Go ahead.
All right.
Yeah.
He's a law enforcement officer.
Okay.
Okay. After long association with Trooper Cooper.
Just fun to say.
It is. I have come to the realization that I don't know enough about the league, about law and its application, to be able to respond intelligently to any kind of legal questions which you generously put forward, Big Weed. I am simply without enough background.
Okay, well, let's just, rather than wondering whether this is specifically true, let's just postulate, just for the sake of argument, let's postulate that Australoids, you know, when I was a kid, there were only a few races: Caucasian, Negroid, Mongoloid, Australoid.
Rather than Australoids, why don't you just simply use Dago? I won't be offended.
So let's just say,
what the word Dago means.
I don't know what Dago means.
Dago is a disrespectful term for an Italian.
Oh, well, okay.
I know that much, but I don't know the origin of it. Is it a derivative of something, or is it an acronym, or what is Dago? I know it's a not kind word about Italians. Do you know the?
I don't know the etymology.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know the etymology of the term. You could just as easily use Guinea if you felt like.
Okay. So I'd like to reuse Australoids though, because they're very unlikely to be upset by what I'm like about to say. So let's say that all of a sudden we have an influx of Australoids into the United States. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. So let's assume that the United States has a sudden influx of Australoids. And let's assume that for whatever reason, Australoids tend to drive below the speed limit. For whatever reason. So they disproportionately get tickets for driving below the speed limit. Now, does a law that says on the Beltway you must drive at least 45 miles per hour, is that law racist because it disproportionately affects Australoids?
On the surface, I would say no.
Okay. So that was essentially Pigweed's argument about stop and frisk, was that if stop and frisk was aimed at high crime areas, and if it's true, and people can look this up for themselves, I'm just saying, postulating for the sake of argument, if it's true that in that area blacks committed more crimes, were committing crimes in these high crime areas, then stop and frisk was not directed at a race, it was directed at an activity, just as the low speed limit on the Beltway would be directed at an activity and not at a race.
I understand. I suggest that it may not have been directed at a high crime area. It may have been directed at a low income area.
That's very possible.
Yep. Now we're getting even further away from race.
Wait a second here. If it were directed at a different low-income area that was primarily white, and I can find them.
Sure.
Believe me.
Yeah.
You would see the same amount of crime as you saw in the New York areas of high crime areas.
Okay, and that's a perfectly fair observation, and it's certainly true that sometimes one thing is a substitute for another thing. That you could say, let's say that you had a racist police commissioner and he wanted to hide his racism by saying, I'm just going after the high crime, low income areas. Because he happens to know that's going to disproportionately get black people. And it's entirely possible that there's a racist motive behind that. But it's also entirely possible that he's just going after activity.
And when the result of the activity reduces murders from 2,200 in a year down to 300 in a year, then it's actually affecting the murders and the crime. And if people in high crime areas are completely innocent, crime, you know, free people are inconvenienced by this, it seems like a small price to pay for those other, help me with the math, 1,800 lives.
Yeah.
Because that is what Stop and Frisk resulted in. So what my experience, what I see is when crime is high and neighborhoods say, where are the police, where are the police, they saturate the neighborhood, bring the crime down, and when the crime is under control, they say, we're being over-policed, we're being over-policed. So I think that's the cycle. After Giuliani and Bloomberg brought those crime numbers down, the next administration was getting heat from the community organizers, and that's why they changed the policy.
You mean the black community organizers, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So
keep going.
So what I'm saying is the policy, not only was it did not have any racial intent, it had the result of saving the lives of many minority people of 1,800. Well, not maybe not all of them were not all of the 2,200 are, you know, in the pre-Giuliani years were minorities, but the
fair
majority.
Number. Yeah.
I don't know why this doesn't have to be about Stop and Frisk.
No,
but I just
so
just
now let's consider a different scenario.
Yes.
Okay.
Suppose I can tell you that during the 30s in Italy, the fasciste reduced the effect of La Cosa Nostra, which eventually became the mafiosi, which eventually became, well, which evolved from the Black Hand.
Right.
But the fasciste reduced the influence and the effect and the crime associated with the Cosa Nostra simply by coming in and looking for anything that looked even remotely like trouble. To hell with the law, to hell with balance, to hell with any kind of a neutral point of view.
Yes, good point.
Yes, and that's similar to the argument.
By the way, the IRA really had a big influence on the drug trade in Belfast.
So, okay, you raise a completely fair point, which is that there are things that can reduce crime that are not good things. Like, for example, when the mafia takes over a town, crime goes down, except for the mafia crime. But other crime goes down.
But not there's no crime in their neighborhoods.
That's right. It's perfectly fair to say that just because something has a good effect does not mean that it's good.
Yes, because yes, there you could just suspend all individual rights, and you know, Saudi Arabia probably has very low crime.
Yes.
So I agree.
Yes. Okay. So, No Man, I have a couple specific questions for you about this quote from come from the Seawolf quote, and it's very common when you read books from this era that people referred to races very differently. They would refer to the Germanic race and the Latin race and the English race and so forth. So now we have a very different conception of race. What do you think is going on there? Why has the word race? For example, another thing is Eastern Europeans were not considered white at certain points in American history. They were
Italian Americans either.
Right. So what's going on there? How come race has been such a fluid concept?
Mostly it's my fault.
Thanks for admitting that.
Here,
man.
Here.
Here. We'll say cheers to that. All right, go ahead. How's that? All right.
That's my fault.
Yeah?
I insist upon using the proper word in a situation.
Okay.
But most everybody else you ask any other people, 99 out of 100 are going to say Swedes are a race, Italians are a race, Indians are a race.
And don't we have the same problem? So Pigweed and I had an interesting conversation with an African missionary the other day. And apparently there is a whole lot of what you might call racism. Well, there is some what we would clearly call racism in Africa, where...
Oh, yeah, you better believe it, Bob.
Where whites are against blacks and blacks are against whites. But also...
And one tribe is against the other.
But that's what I was getting to, the tribalism. Yes, so tribalism sounds more like Scandinavians versus Italians versus English.
Right, and it seems like we could just scrap racism altogether and say, really what we're talking about here is my in-group and out-group.
Right.
That it's my group over your group because black Americans don't like Africans and vice versa.
Ethnocentrism is what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think...
There is a word for this, big weed. There is a word for this. It's ethnocentrism.
Okay, see, so the topic of our show here is, what is racism?
What is,
and, I'm not getting any closer, and I'm starting to wonder if it's useless. And really, what we're talking about is ethnocentrism or tribalism. Say you're in Brooklyn, there's a Polish neighborhood next to a Russian neighborhood next to a Jamaican neighborhood, and the Poles don't like either of them, and they won't hire either of them. Is it racist to not hire Russians? Not racist to not hire Russians, and racist to not hire Jamaicans.
May I hold forth?
Yes, please.
There's another book called Holidays in Hell.
Ah, yes.
P.J. O'Rourke.
Good old P.J. O'Rourke.
Yes, many years ago.
Anyway, this is what P.J. O'Rourke has to say about race, and I subscribe to it.
And so this is old. This has got to be at least 25 years old, right?
Finally, people are all exactly alike. There's no such thing as a race, and barely such a thing as an ethnic group. If we were dogs, we'd be the same breed. George Bush and an Australian Aborigine have fewer differences than a Lhasa Apso and a toy fox terrier. A Japanese raised in Riyadh would be an Arab. A Zulu raised in New Rochelle would be an orthodontist. I wish I could say I found this out by spending Arctic nights on ice floes with Inuit elders and by sitting with tribal medicine men over fires made of human bones in Madagascar. But actually, I found it out by sleeping around. People are all the same, though their circumstances differ terribly. Trouble doesn't come from slopes, kikes, niggers, spies, or white capitalist pigs.
That's gonna do it.
It comes from the heart.
Right.
Wow.
So, it's a good quote. And I have heard, and I agree with this, that there is far more difference within a race than there is between races. That if you take the average of any race and compare it with the average of any other race, that they will be more similar than the distinctions you can find within any race. So to that extent, I think PJ is exactly on target. So given that is so true, why are we so obsessed with racism?
I tell you what. Let me bring another guest onto your show, and you can ask her.
Hmm.
Yes, well, in a recent show, Crow Hill and I discussed the incredible progress we have in racial unity and the elimination of discrimination and laws and over the last 40 years, and the people who were young men or civil rights leaders in the 60s could not have imagined how good we have it now, and yet their grandchildren think that it's still 1875 and could not possibly be worse, and see racism around every corner and under every rock. Why? How did we get here? When I thought everything was getting much better, and but if it weren't for the clamoring classes, if I was just looking around at what I see, who's hanging out with who, and who is dating whom, and who's living in what neighborhood, and who's what families look like while they're on the beach, I would say we've made incredible progress. But that's not what you hear.
Crowhill here. So this conversation went on for a very long time. We covered a lot of interesting topics, but we're going to have to call it quits there for this episode, and maybe we'll include the rest of it in a later episode. Thank you very much.